Welcome to the Blurs of Black Nerds with the Word. This is a podcast where us blurs discuss comics, manga, anime, movies, and much more happening in pop culture. This is one of your hosts, Marcus Andre. With me, I have...
What is good? This is Drew reporting live from the Dirty Dwarf, Waldorf, Maryland. Follow me on all my socials, Drew A.1 on IG and Drew A1 underscore for Twitter. I'm ready. Episode 12. Let's get it popping.
We're going to make that hashtag popping, Dirty Dwarf.
Yes, we... bro, I'm trying to start a movement, bro. I'm trying to start it.
Justin. Yeah. Episode 12. And let's get this popping, man. I'm hype. I'm real hype.
Are you hype, huh?
Oh, I'm hype. All right.
Who's next?
Yo, hip-hop, we got to jump in this. Go. Nah, big homie Kenny out here. We in Moco. Same thing all day, every day. He said the Dirty Dwarf but around here. We call Murder Moco, if y'all didn't know. But
yeah. Murder?
What? Whoa. This is the safest place I've ever lived. What are you talking about?
Now that.
Go to Langley Park at night, or let's say go to Belfry, and they toss it, baby. Yeah.
All right.
You do that, Marcus. You
all let right, me know. I will. I'll put that on my checklist.
Murder.
How y'all feeling today? I never asked that. How y'all feeling?
Hey, man. I can't complain.
I'm feeling good. Feeling real blessed.
That's a good word for it, yeah. That's a good word, blessed. I'm feeling blessed today.
Happy we off work. I'm happy I'm off work.
3-day weekend, everything like that. Yep. We have to give our respects to Chadwick Boseman. Last Friday, he died of cancer. We would like to send condolences to his friends, family, and fellow fans. We'd also like to thank Chadwick for being an inspiration to all of us Black folks, children, and adults alike who yearn to see themselves in their favorite superheroes or in a giant sci-fi film. We thank you for expertly and respectfully portraying numerous Black legends such as James Brown and Jackie Robinson. Lastly, we thank you for being a great human being. Rest in power.
Yes, definitely rest in power. He's one of in the run he had from, I believe, 2012 up until now, he made himself an instant legend in just Black art and him portraying the heroes that we still look up to this day, from actual superheroes like Black Panther into like people like James Brown, like you already said, Jackie Robinson. Like the things he did is something that will be remembered forever. So just seeing him, and the fact that they kept it under wraps for so long, is just, that makes it more him, his team, his family, that makes it just more respectable and things of that nature. So it wasn't, you know, he had no scandals, no nothing in the tabloids, and nothing like that. He's just a great human being that just is also an amazing actor. So just, you know, sad to see him go, but you know, always respect. We always got the movies to go back on. So
yeah. Truly, you to a legend, man. I almost cried that day. Truly.
Yeah, I was sad up in the club. I was like, bro.
Like
I was just already playing in the drink, but I was just like. Go ahead.
Oh, my bad. The craziest thing is I keep going back to his Instagram and be like, man, this is just like, and I'll get like a little emotional.
It's real.
Yeah, man. It's just, yeah. It's like, dang, this is hard to, he's like literally one of my favorite actors. Like he's really an amazing actor. So well-rounded and really knows how to embody any character and just a genuine human being.
Yeah.
Always. Like just the fact that he was going to visit like those young kids that had cancer as well, and just connecting to them in that way was just truly amazing. You know, it just goes to show like it's more than just like being a celebrity and actor and everything. It's just truly be a genuine human being. So yeah, RIP to
him. Also, you never know what anybody's going through at any time. So I mean, gotta be good to everybody. I mean, it's still a sad thing to see him go because like he was. Like, to me, like, this generation's next Denzel Washington in a way because, like, have you heard a story about Denzel? Denzel paid for him to be in, to go to acting school and everything. And then after that, Angela Bassett, he walked her when she was being honored at Howard and she helped him out with some stuff. And it was just from that time that he sat here and embodied all these roles and touched so many people's lives with the stuff he's did on and off the film, just to still keep that to himself, because he was just trying to make sure, like, he wasn't trying to say, okay, I have cancer, I have this and that, try to play that. He was trying to be strong for just us. It's just crazy and everything. But, I mean, you just got to make sure to give people their roles while they're alive. But, yeah.
Yeah, most definitely.
All right, respect. So now this is going to be the last news story for me. DC gets a new general manager. This is a new position. I got this information from Boris Kitt from The Hollywood Reporter. Daniel Cherry, who hails from the world of esports, has been named senior VP and general manager of DC Comics. This is all quoted, by the way. In the newly created position, the executive, who is coming from video game behemoth Activision Blizzard, where he acted as chief marketing officer of his esports division, will head up business affairs, editorial, talent services, marketing, sales, brand, and direct-to-consumer for DC. He will also oversee business development with current senior VP business strategy, finance, and administration, and DePies. This newly created role will free up Jim Lee to work more on the creative side of the business. The two are expected to work closely with one another. And you might be wondering, Marcus, why are you even talking about this? One, because it's a black man, and I think this a black man holding that top of a position in DC is important. Two, is because I think it basically kind of gives us an idea of where DC is going with their business and everything like that. This seems like more of a business move than a creative move. So, I just thought it was interesting, and I am excited to see what Daniel Cherry is going to bring to DC.
Yep, I am as well, you know, but from my side of the news spectrum, I got first a couple of days ago, DC announced that actor for the new Batman role, Robert Pattinson, contracted the coronavirus. So seeing that as a DC fan, as a Batman fan, and this is as a person for the actual actor, Robert Pattinson to contract is pretty sad to see. So I'm not sure what their plans are. If the release date is going to change, you know, if they're still going to try to shoot filming it or however they're going to try to do it, I don't know. But, yeah, pretty sad seeing, you know, somebody else just contract this virus. Has been, it's been terrible this year. The Rock has the coronavirus, him and his family. So, you know, prayers out to them. To both of them and their families for getting it. He also is going to be playing in Black Adam, so it was two L's for DC right now. So I'm not sure when. I mean, like you said earlier before we start recording, Marcus. I'm not sure if they even started recording for the or filming for the movie that's going to come out. But most likely, it could, depending on how bad it gets, it could delay it for quite some time. So we will see how that goes. Disney Plus, I'm not sure if they already released it today or yesterday, but Mulan, the live action version of Mulan has come out on Disney Plus for 30 whopping dollars. So whoever's going to do that, whoever loves Mulan, y'all go ahead and do that. But they're going to release the free version of it on December 4th. So to me, that's their official release date. So I don't know. I really don't know who's going to pay for that joint, $30, when you're already paying for Disney Plus.
If you do pay for it, send me your password.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. If you
ain't no Mushu in it, I'm a pass.
Yeah, man. Like, no Mushu. This is, I feel like it's not going to have the comedic effect that the original one did. And I mean, not saying that's, I mean, that, I think that is what they're looking for, but, I'm not paying $30 for it.
Serious thing.
Yeah. I mean, I could watch it, but I'm not paying $30. That's not even, that's more than you would go to the movies to see.
Y'all think it's going to stay musical? Like with all like the songs and everything? Let's get down to business.
I don't think it's going to be musical.
Cut that out though. Like, what's it, they only have like, there's not going to be like no singing parts. There's going to be like stuff in the background because it's supposed to be like a they're going for more of an action flick movie and everything and all of that, because they cut Mushu, they cut the little Cricket. They cut the whole, the whole kind of thing with her and the guy. I forgot his name or whatever. I was like, I understand, yeah, because you want to be more culturally accurate, but I wanted it to be like that, but yeah.
I guess that's what we got the original version for.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's that. Also, John Boyega, who stars in the new version of the Star Wars films, we all know who that is, Finn, he was on GQ recently, and he has some words. I don't have any quotes, but he has some words about Star Wars. I've seen some posts on Twitter about that. It went pretty viral with him, you know, just how he was, him and other black, other minority actors were portrayed in a role. I think, you know, we spoke on this before where we said that Finn probably should have been the main character of the whole Force Awakens and on, you know, going on that down the other movies, which I, you know, that just reaffirmed it for me from the actual actor to say that, you know, about Disney, you know, with him, he's been very vocal about, you know, about things like Black Lives Matter and all everything going on in the world this year. So seeing that is no different than what he's already been speaking out about and speaking out against. So it's pretty, you know, impactful seeing it against his actual employer at Disney, or one of his employers. So yeah, seeing that's like, man, I really wish Finn was the main character. Like, if him and Rey could have been like the two main characters and then just been working together with, you know, the Force and everything and their lifesaver, that'd have been pretty nice scene. But we don't have that.
So I'd love to see a black woman as like the protagonist in a Star Wars film.
Yeah, I feel like that has to happen.
Yeah, that would just be great.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now we're going to get into books. I hate to put Justin Drew on the spot, but do y'all have any books this week?
Man, you know we don't. Well, right. At least I don't.
All right, Kenny, you go first.
I only got two. Like, what's the name I only got two this week? Batman 98 and the last issue of Empire. So I'll get into Empire first. It's finally wrapped up as far as the storyline and everything. Story, like what's saying, wraps up. They defeat the Kotili or whatever you want to call them and whatever, with the help of everybody helping on all fronts. And as far as Dad, Mr. Fantastic and the Iron Man suit helping out. Black Panther was dead in the last issue. He came back to life. And then after that, he was saying they helped him, they helped them destroy the little bud and imprison their leader and everything. And then after that, they stopped the pyre, which is like the scroll device that can detonate a sun. And Hulkling is now he was crowned during this, and he's going to continue to be the emperor of the Skrull Kree Alliance and everything. But yeah. That's for Empire. Batman, have you read that yet?
Batman, yeah, I read it.
I like this issue was actually all right. I'm okay with this.
Yeah, issue. I will say that too. I like this issue. I think I noticed this issue that this is a more Batman like Bruce story than a Batman Joker story.
Yes.
Joker is kind of like a secondary character. It's almost like we don't get a lot of his character beats at all. He's like an afterthought. I like James Tynion IV's characterization of Bruce. And his characterization of Harley. Harley is not annoying or anything. She is not very important, but she's important to the story. She's a good side character in this issue and has been a good side character in this arc. I really enjoyed 98.
Yeah, like I said, 98 was good. Like, we got the whole resolution with him finally coming out of his coma. And, like, what's him... putting the whole Alfred thing in perspective and everything, as far as, okay, I'm finally okay with him being dead and trying to move forward and not just spazzing out and going to anger mode or whatever. And I mean, it was good as far as that. I mean, when you have two chapters left, at the end of the chapter, Catwoman's talking about, can you all help me out? We're going to build an army and I can make you rich or some shit like that. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. But how are we going to do that? And like, you have two issues, man.
The other thing I was thinking about was James Tynion, when he did Detective, it was basically a group book. And it seems like he's gearing this up to be a group book as well. Do you think that's the direction he's going to go with this?
I mean, maybe, because, like, afterward, because, like, I've seen some of the previews for, like, future comic releases and everything. Like, after this, they have, it's still going to be Batman and Catwoman after this. It's, like, that's, we already had to get used to that. We're saying, essentially, we're going to have Nightwing back, spoiler alert for that, but finally, after all this time, and then Harley's supposed to be joining them up, and they're supposed to deal with the clown killer or whatever. And that's the next thing going forward.
Okay. So I'm going to get into my books for this week. I completed Gotham Central Book 1. This book is amazing. It's basically a cop procedural for the GCPD. And it's just hella interesting how they handle villains when Batman is not around. The creative team on this book is Ed Brubaker and Greg Rucka, and it's penciled by Michael Lark. There's three stories in this volume. The first one is In the Line of Duty, written by both Brubaker and Rucka. In this story, Mr. Freeze is concocting a plan to freeze people during some university in Gotham's commencement speech. And the guy I was talking about last episode, Marcus Fields, the detective who lost his partner, he basically figures out the scheme and gets the Gotham City Police Department and Batman to go to the commencement to prevent Freeze from doing what he was planning to do. The next story is In the Line of Duty. And this was very interesting. Someone bought Firefly's costume off of G-Bay. It's like DC's version of eBay. And it's this rich guy. And he killed his nanny because she found out that he was going around burning stuff up with the Firefly costume. And the Gotham City Police Department are going around trying to uncover clues as to why this girl was kidnapped and killed. So that was a good story. And the last one was Half a Life. I think this one is my favorite. It was written by Rucka. And it's basically about Montoya Renee coming out as lesbian, or forced to come out as lesbian, because someone is going around recording her life, taking pictures of her life with her girlfriend and stuff like that, and posting it on the boards in the police department, and they're following her around. And at the end, you find out that it's actually Two-Face, and Two-Face strangely has a thing for Renee Montoya, even though she's gay. He likes her because she shows him compassion and stuff like that. So he's been tearing her life apart so they can be together. His logic is all screwed, but it's a very compelling story. So next we're going to get into Strange Adventures, issues 4 and 5, written by Tom King and penciled by Evan Doc Shaner and Mitch Gerrits. Kenny, have you been reading Strange Adventures?
Nah, I haven't picked it up.
So it's about Adam Strange. And it's basically a story about xenophobia. And in this story, what's his name? Adam Strange gets framed for killing someone, or it was something in relation to what he did on Ron. And so him and his wife get the Justice League to investigate what he's done. And they get Mr. Terrific to investigate. And he goes to Ron at issue 4 to see what had happened in the Ron-Pizik war, the war they had against the Pazik Empire, the Pazik people, and they're trying to cover up all the documents from the Pazik, saying that, oh, it's impossible to read the Pazik language and everything like that. And Mr. Terrific is like, just show me the documents. I can read Pazik. And they're like, no, their resources are biased and everything like that, and you still can't read it. But then he speaks in Pazik, and they're like, what the fuck? And that basically leads him to get in trouble with the Ronian planet, the Ronian government. The next issue, he and his wife are basically going against the Justice League because they're insinuating that Adam Strange might have committed some war atrocities on Ron. And yeah, that's basically it. It's a good story. I recommend it. Let's get into the TV segment.
Okay. So, first I want to talk about the rotations that I've usually been on. The Hunter x Hunter, Boruto, Fire Force that I've been mainly on for just about this whole summer. Fire Force is keeping up as usual. They're they have some serious world building that is highly underrated. And I think I didn't see the latest episode that came out today. They come out every Fridays. But I'd seen some clips on on Twitter that and the animation did it again. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Also Hunter x Hunter. I'm still in, I have about 15 episodes left. So I'm buckling down, getting to the last few episodes on that. I'm on the part, Justin, where Netero and Miriam, they're actually starting to exchange blows now.
So they confronted each other. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. So they flew away to the land where they can have some space to fight. But Miriam was like, "I'm not trying to fight," so he just sat down. And So it's the power scaling is so crazy because it's like they're not even the main characters, or like there's no It's so weird, so different. I don't know, because Gon and Killua, they each have their own fights, but it's not the usual shonen thing where it's like the main character fights the main villain.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's, I mean, like the main character, it's like for this one, they all got their own little vendetta going on.
Yeah, which is cool. It's different. I like that. But I mean, part of that is because it's been on hiatus for almost 10 years. But yeah, like watching this, and that's what I hate doing, watching shows that I get attached to that I know are canceled, because I get attached to it and I'm like, okay, I want to see what happens next. And then I already knew this, but it's on hiatus, so it's like, okay, when am I going to get this? So I see what Bleach fans are going through, because it's like, yeah.
But thank goodness Bleach is coming back. Yeah, but pay attention to that fight with Miriam and Netero. It's going to be pretty... It's gonna be cool.
Oh, I will. Yeah. The thing, I'm so scared because I feel like there's gonna be some people that's gonna die. I'll be like, God. But them ants are too strong, bro. Like they're so strong. It's starting to get annoying at this point.
Yeah. It's wild.
It really is. But
it gets really sad at the end, honestly.
It does.
Like I said, everybody in the show has their own vendetta. So, and they willing to go through it, like, no matter what. So.
Wow. Well, so that I watched Hunter x Hunter with that. And, again, with Boruto, and this episode, it was a pretty, pretty hype episode. I'm looking forward to the next episode on Sunday. Like I said, they've been trying to find who has the Hashirama cell, because that's a big mystery now in the smaller nations. There's a lot more war going on there. And one of the Kara Inners have finally caught up to Team 7. So I have a clip from him fighting him. Okay, let me just paint this picture first. Team 7 was trying to find whoever stole the Hashirama cell. That's a whole nother thing. And then the light, I don't know, I was about to say hidden lightning, the hidden cloud ninjas, they came and they're looking for the same thing too, and they were willing to fight Team Seven on who it has it. They don't have it, and then turns out the Kara is also after it at the same time. So there's like three or four groups that's trying to get this joint, and one of the Kara enters. His name is Deepa. It's pretty strange name, but so he's after them, and there's a short fight of him fighting Omoi, one of the cloud ninjas. So and I think going into the next episode, Omoi is in big trouble. So I won't be surprised if he dies. And it was funny because there was a lot of people on like Twitter and stuff. They were like really mad that a Naruto, like an OG Naruto character, is getting whooped by somebody that's just stronger than him. And it's a new character. It's like the anime onlys really don't know what's going to come, because you know, Justin, how the Kara members are, how strong they are. Like, people was mad about the,
like, refer back to the fact that we have like one person sitting in like the lair, chilling with like the ten-tailed beast, like holding him down, like it's like nothing.
Oh yeah, code,
like literally.
Yeah, it's just like people were mad, you know, when like people like Asuma and them died by Akatsuki members, and like they're sad and all. And like, you know, with Jiraiya, of course, but they don't know what's going to happen. They're not prepared for what's about to happen. So they're mad that somebody as weak as Omoi from the Hidden Cloud is getting whooped by an actual Kara Inner. What they have in store is going to be crazy. So
I feel like it's about to be like a serious like bloodbath, the way it's going, honestly.
It will. And going into chapter 50 for the actual, for the manga, that's going to be hype. That's literally going to be like a Dragon Ball Z.
It might be, honestly.
It's going to be that type of hype. Yeah, so that was his first introduction into the anime. So yeah, Omoi is probably going to be dead next episode. But yeah, that is Deepa. He's the Roman numerals. That's every Kara members. They have like face tattoos on their so it's 1, 2. It goes up to 9. So his is 7.
So they're like ranks and everything, right?
No, they're not ranks, because number 4 is the strongest one out of all of them. So, they're just Roman numerals, like kind of like the Kotsky's rings.
Because I was wondering what they're gonna have, what have to rock besides the clouds and everything. I mean, hey, Kotsky had the biggest drip back in as well.
Oh yeah, they did. They still do. Yeah. But it's just funny how seeing somebody a video like that and everybody on Naruto Twitter went crazy because they didn't see somebody like an OG Naruto character get whooped like that, so, or about to get whooped.
It's probably because he's black and they just want to.
That is always a good reason.
I ain't seen nothing that was too crazy for him to make me like, all right, yeah, I'm scared he getting whooped, because like he's swinging a sword around and everything, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we never really seen him do like anything extraordinary. Yeah,
That's the part that kills me. He's never done anything crazy, so it's like, why are you mad that he's a fodder character, for being honest?
Like, to be honest, I think that was the first time I even saw him use like a jutsu, which was just shadow clone. So
yeah, he did something in the like the war arc against some white Zetsus, but I don't know. It's just like, why are you mad about that? So I just wanted to show y'all the actual design of the character and stuff. So
all right.
That's all I got. All
right. Stuff though.
Who's next? Go.
Hey.
Go.
He's it.
I've been watching this show actually with my girls, called, I don't know if y'all heard of it, Blood and Water. It's like this South African joint where like this girl, she grows up and everything, but she had like a sister and all that. And apparently like the sister was kidnapped. But someone framed the father for kidnapping the child and giving it to like some trafficking organization. So the girl that's still in the family, like she's like probably like 17 or so, and she meets this other girl that she's really curious about, and she's starting to try to put the piece together where like her sister went or who snatched her up. So she thinks this one girl that like was in like a swim meet that she saw is her sister. So she transfers schools and like is pretty much stalking her down and everything, and like try to like figure out like where like she came from and all that. It's a pretty good show. I just finished like the first season, and I think the next season comes out next year. So if y'all ever want to look into that, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, I might have to put that on my queue. My queue? Queue?
You got it right, queue.
Yeah, queue. I like Quay.
Is it Quay?
I'm about to start watching that HBO show with Fine Shawty. With, she used to play...
From Insecure?
Uh-uh. She was on Roll Bounce. And when she was
What's it called? Ice cream?
Lovecraft Country, I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, yeah. It's
I'm about to start watching that.
It's Jussie Smollett's sister, I think.
Oh yeah.
I remember her name is similar to his name. Something J.
Julia Smollett. Maybe? Jessica something? I don't know.
Yeah, but I've seen clips of her on that show with her with like a baseball bat or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, looks pretty good.
Sure.
What about you, Kenny?
Basically, well, I'm waiting for Tosh.0 to come back on. It comes back on, I think, either the next week or week after next. But meantime, between time, I've been watching JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 5, the dub, just to see how it measures up to the sub. It's been really good so far for some parts. I mean, as far as JoJo, I always prefer to watch it in sub because, like, the action cries, the attacks, the battles, it hits a lot more in sub than dub. And... besides that, Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
You still watch Tosh.0?
Yeah, what you mean? I mean, well, funny thing is, this is his last season, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, what's the name of it? It was announced, I think, like, two weeks ago. But basically, since Comedy Central is shifting to a more animated approach for comedy, they canceled a lot of, what's the name, live-action shows as far as, like, well... in person or whatever shows, because they canceled Drunk History, which I'm okay with you canceling that. That shit was trash.
Oh, Crystal was on there sometimes.
Huh? Right.
What, Drunk History?
Crystal. Yeah. Crystal Finance was on there.
Like I said, it was, like, for some of them, it was, like, but the majority of them, like, you have celebrities, they get drunk and talk about history, and, like, most of it was just incoherent ramblings, and it was supposed to be funny, like probably a season or so, but it went for on for five, and I was like, why the fuck is it still on TV? But
wow,
Tosh is gonna, that's gonna leave a hole though. He said stopping it because, like, the funny thing is, earlier this year he was renewed for four more seasons, but they came back and canceled him and everything. So he said he's still shopping, like, he's canceled on Comedy Central, but he's shopping it around about things. I don't know where else he can really go because Comedy Central would be the only place, and MTV has their own EBT version of it with ridiculousness, but yeah.
Yeah, I know this is random, but did y'all see Willem Dafoe did a screen test for the Joker just recently?
No.
Yeah. Like, he had the whole makeup on and everything, and he just, like, literally posted it. It was like, oh, wow, this looks pretty nice, actually.
Who did it?
Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe, the Green Goblin from Spider-Man.
The first
Tobey Maguire.
I can see that.
Yeah.
He'd be a good Joker, but I don't. Yeah, do y'all think he's too old for Robert Pattinson's Joker? I mean, Batman.
Depends what universe they're doing. Because remember, DC's supposed to do the whole multiverse thing, though.
If I send y'all the picture, y'all will see, and y'all can judge for yourselves. But I'm not entirely sure.
But not for Robert Pattinson, though.
He looks pretty decent for her, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
I'm trying to think. If I have a young Batman, I think I would definitely want an older Joker, but I don't know if I won't want an older Joker that old.
Yeah.
Like, his villains got to be, like, a little bit older, but not too much, or around his age range.
I'm going to send it to y'all.
I want a Joker around his age range.
Yeah.
That's just me.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, because, why am I blanking on his name right now? The greatest Joker of all time.
Heath Ledger?
Heath Ledger, yeah, Heath Ledger was around Batman's age.
Yeah.
And, you know, a young man can do all that shit that Heath Ledger did in that movie. An old man isn't going to be all, you know, jumping around, blowing up shit and stuff like that. You know, he's going to need a walker and stuff like that. So,
I mean, only character I can say that you have to have older than Batman is the Penguin, and that's the only thing I can say. That's it.
Yeah, because that's old money, and all Penguin has to do is sit there and be rich. So,
yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the main segment this week. Daredevil Born Again. Written by Frank Miller. The penciler is David Mazzucchelli, and it's colored by Richmond Lewis. It was published in 1987 by Marvel Comics, and I got this about from Marvel.com. Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli present one of the most defining Daredevil runs of all time. When Matt Murdock's superhero identity is outed by Karen Page, Kingpin makes moves to destroy Matt on every level, targeting his relationships, his career, and his very will to live. But just because Daredevil's in purgatory doesn't mean he'll end up in hell. So let's get into discussion questions. I am very interested to see how you guys thought about this story. Overall thoughts. Let's go with Kenny first.
Daredevil Born Again. Good. I mean, like, what's in the 80s stories? Like, what's in the, like, it's, I always like reading them because, like, the nostalgia feel because of it, like, the way it's drawn, all that during the time, because it reminds me of Civil, like, not Civil War, Secret Wars and everything. But as far as the storyline, I mean, it was a good storyline. Ironically, his life is ruined by a Karen. But,
That's good. That's a good one.
But, I didn't notice that. Wow.
Yeah, his life is ruined by a Karen, and that, I mean, the man builds up. As far as comparing it to the current storyline, I mean, it's, like, it's good to see both ways, like, how you can still have, after all this time, like, a story of him building himself back up after hitting rock bottom and everything, and reclaiming his mantle and all that. I just, only thing I can say I wish they had done is that at the end, like, Kingpin is, like, he's dealt with. Like, he was dealt with that, like, okay, lawsuit's stuck, he's losing respect, et cetera, but the man's still out and about doing whatever. He's just like, curse you, Daredevil, I'll win again next time, or whatever. I was like, all right. But great storyline, though. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think they didn't really deal with him like that because it wasn't the end of their run, maybe. Well, the end of Frank Miller's run. Because there's still loose ends with another crazy thing that happened in the story, too. But we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
What about you, Drew?
Yeah, I felt the same way. Well, first, Daredevil, in my opinion, is one of the most underrated superheroes in Marvel. But so reading this, I was, you know, surprised at how this one was really good. Like, this, I could tell this one is one of the Daredevil classics, or what, you know, a lot of the Marvel fans would say. So I can already tell reading that. But I had the same sentiments with Kenny on how Kingpin was not dealt with. But that's just a minor thing. But I thoroughly enjoyed this. I like the correlations that this had with just the theories and symbolism of Christianity and things like that. I like seeing shows or movies or comics of, like, the hero being down bad, which they did not take this one lightly at all. Matt was down bad. So it was pretty funny seeing how, you know, he just really came from, went from the bottom straight up, man. Kingpin really was a great villain in this one. So I like that.
Wait, elaborate on the similarities between this story and Christianity, because I'm not very religious, so I wouldn't caught it.
Well, I seen on one of the covers, there wasn't Daredevil being held by a nun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that one, it was a cover of that, and then, like, man, I can't pull it up as of right now, but like, the one, it was like a silhouette of, like, a cross.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so that aspect, or at least the visual aspect, was pretty good, and just the animation, you know, art. How it looked. Yeah, the art. How it looked visually with the art. It's very, very old school. What year did this come out?
1987.
I could tell it was very, but that's the first comic that I've read that's that old that I enjoyed. So kudos to them for that one. But yeah.
All right, what about you, Jess?
I liked it. Going off that art style with Drew, like, I did like the art style a lot. Just like, it was like some Charlie Brown art style, honestly, to me. And no, Matt was really down, man. Like, first of all, this man, he's already going through like a rough time. And the part that really got me the most was he's just walking up to his house and the joint blows up right in front of him. And I'm just like, bro, this man can't get a break, man. This man literally cannot catch a break. And like Drew said, Kingpin really had that. He had that. He had power over him, honestly. This was a good role for him. And I like the storyline, honestly. I like how he was reunited with this one and his mom, too. And he knew how, like, she was lying and everything. She was like, I'm not your mother, you know. And he was just like, he can sense your heart beating and everything. And I was like, this is really good writing. This is really fleshed out. I liked it. But it did feel like it was left kind of hanging and everything at the end. Because, like, it felt like a weird, like, happily ever after. But at the end of the day, I was still, like, wondering, just, like, I mean, you didn't, like, exactly finish the job with this guy. I mean, because if he finds you again, it's like, you know, yeah.
Yeah, this is my second time reading it, and I felt that way about the ending the first time. Like, it doesn't have a significant wrap-up, and that might be one of its shortcomings, but I will give it the benefit of the doubt that maybe they were holding off for a more significant ending at the end of Frank Miller's run, because this is just one story in his run. So yeah, that's that on that. But otherwise, I think this is a great Daredevil story. I think this book is a reason why the Daredevil show is so good. In the season three, they draw a lot from this story. From, what's his name? Bullseye dressing up, even though it wasn't Bullseye in this story. Someone dressing up as Daredevil. Him actually meeting his mom and him going face to face with Kingpin and everything like that. I don't think it's the best thing I've read from Frank Miller, though. Frank Miller's best story to me is probably Batman Year One. But I like the similarities between Batman Year One and this. You get inner dialogue from everyone, and is sometimes it's pinned a different way. Like in Batman Year One, when you get Batman's, you know, dialogue and stuff like that, it's kind of, it looks like it's written in a notebook and stuff like that. And I think Jim Gordon's is written another way. And in this, you get Ben Urich, the reporter, and his is like in typewriting format, and Matt's is, you know, regular comic book format and stuff like that. It was just really good writing, and some of the inner dialogue read like prose. You don't get that a lot in comic books. So it was just really cool. The next question is, how did you feel about David Mazzucchelli's art? David Mazzucchelli and Richard Lewis's art.
I already alluded to that, how that art, you know, given for what it's time, I think it would have been, you know, that's how most comics were back in the day, weren't they? So you know, I that's usually not my style. I kind of like the more modern version of how a lot of comics look, but that being said, you know, the story kind of kept me into it more so. The art was definitely good. I mean, I didn't have any complaints. But I'll say my favorite panel was the one where he saw his apartment blown up, and then you saw the reflection the reflection from his glasses of the apartment. I think that was that part was really good. That that art style was really good. Also, like I said, when he was laying down with the nun, I think that you know, had some symbolism with that one. So yeah, for the most part, it was fairly good. But the I think the story and stuff kept me going with this one. Also, there was a lot. I don't know if that's usual with how what is the writer's name again? I forgot.
Frank Miller.
Yeah, I don't know if Frank Miller, if that's usually his, but there's a lot of dialogue in the panels. Is that like a lot? Like a lot. Is that usually his style?
He writes like prose sometimes. Like okay. He's writing a book. It's very descriptive, yeah. And he uses colorful language and everything like that. I like that. Sometimes it's too much, but I liked it in this book for the most part.
Yeah, that's something that stood out to me as well. For some parts, you know, you definitely, I wish more comics and more manga had stuff like that. And other parts, you know, it's just, you know, I kind of draw a conclusion myself. But yeah, that's all something that stood out to me. But for the most part, the art was decent.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's for its time, it's really good. It's like I said, it gives a retro feel. So I like it started seeing different eras of art as far as like the way they draw it, the way they make like their dialogue boxes and everything and all that. Like, I liked it because it was good for its time, but it's like compared to current days, it's a weird comparison because current day is like a lot more vivid, different colors meld more together. You have a lot more, like, you can see a lot more defined stuff, but for its time, it was great. It was like, I liked the retro feel. Yeah.
I mean, I liked it, honestly. I'm a guy that I love nostalgia, honestly. I love like gritty stuff like that. Even like with like old shows, anime, manga, comics, I like that gritty look to it. So it was cool with me, honestly. Like new stuff would be so shiny now for no reason. So yeah. Like I appreciated it. Whether it was like for its time today, I liked it.
So, as I stated before, Frank Miller is like a legendary comic book writer. I would arguably say David Mazzucchelli is a legendary comic book artist as well. They did Batman Year One, which is another seminal comic book story, and Mazzucchelli's art is incredible there. It is good in this story, but it's incredible in Batman Year One. And I'm just wondering what happened, because those two stories came out like maybe less than 2 years apart or something like that. I know it came out in the later 80s too. Kenny, have you read Year One?
I've read bits and pieces. I haven't read it fully.
You seen the art though. Would you agree like the art looks better in there?
Like, well, so as far as that, because I was like, I didn't know it was that close together, because I thought it was like a couple years apart because of how better it looked in there.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me see something. It came out in 1987. It came out the same year. That's crazy. So, yeah, I don't know what was happening. I don't know what was happening, but Year One, the art is leaps and bounds above the one in here.
DC probably paid better for that.
Yeah, he was like, for these four issues, y'all gonna get top-notch Mazzucchelli for this shit. So, I really like the art, but I was kind of let down. I thought it was going to be as good as Batman Year One, but it wasn't. So, let's get into the next question. In this story, Foggy, Matt's best friend, starts a relationship with Matt's ex-girlfriend, Glory, almost immediately after they break up. Despite the betrayal, Foggy still supports Matt throughout the book to the extent that he prevents Matt from being convicted in court. What do you think about Matt and Foggy's relationship? Anybody can go.
He wild, in my opinion. I mean,
like, as far as their background, they've been like boys since like they met in college and everything. Like they've been like, all right, I got your back, you got my back, all that, this and this. And they went to business together as far as that law firm and everything. Basically, like I don't know the storyline that came beforehand, but like, you like beforehand, like what's saying what happened is the business, they were going out of business and everything, and all this. Foggy couldn't keep it up, and Matt's been busy just being Daredevil and shit. So he was like, yeah, because like, even as Shardy trashing them and everything, he was sitting there, he's like, hey, yo, man, stop trashing the homie, man. Stop trashing the homie. And to shut her up, he slid a CD, and after that, she shut up after a little bit. We didn't hear that much complaining afterward. But they end up getting engaged and married or whatever, and I'm like, I mean, heck, man, if you want your man, your homies, stop your seconds, by all means, go ahead. Matt wasn't worried about her because he wanted the ex-druggy joint, but that's beside the point.
Yeah.
You said the ex-druggy joint.
Ex-druggy. Yeah. Foggy definitely broke the code with that one, but, you know. I didn't really think much of it. You know, he did help him, like you say, he did help him not get convicted and all that. But couldn't have been me. Could have been me. I still have been mad, man. That'd have been the main villain in my eyes.
I mean, like, the funny thing is that happened, but like Matt was never really around for all that though. He was
That's the thing. Yeah, he was in the back. He was in the background the whole time.
Yeah.
I think it's funny, because it's just like, at that point, I would have been like, so this is why we were bros the whole time, huh? This was the agenda, really. But, hey, it is what it is, I guess.
Wow. I thought Glory was going to be someone who was on the Kingpin's payroll or something like that. You know, like another thorn in Matt's backside or something like that. Because I was like, why is she here? Like, why is this story happening? But I guess it was just like coincidence that another part of Matt's life was falling apart.
Yeah.
Like, I did.
Go ahead.
It's strange because I did like Glory, though. That's the thing. Normally women in that position, I'd be like, I don't like her. You know, but Glory, you could see where she was coming from. I don't think she should have dated the homie, but I couldn't see where she was coming from. Matt didn't even care that she was dating his best friend. And it didn't seem like she was spiked or anything like that. It seemed like she genuinely liked Foggy. And I also liked her because she was passionate about her work. At the end of the story, she was trying to get those pictures off. Her and Peter Parker probably having picture competitions at the Daily Bugle and everything like that. Yeah. So that was dope.
Yeah.
Let's get into this next question. Do you think Wilson Fisk, aka the Kingpin, was a good antagonist?
Yeah, that nigga was on point. I mean, still crazy how this whole story happened. Like, my man was already losing his job because of all that and everything. Then his ex joint sold him out for just a shot of heroin. It wasn't for money or everything. Shardy was a druggie down that bad. She's like, I know who Daredevil is. Sold it away. And that this man took it upon himself to destroy every other part as far as he had the guy that Matt Murdock went to help out, was in lie. Had his house blown up, had his accounts froze, et cetera, et cetera. Had this man willing to come pull up face to face just to run his fate, didn't beat him. Throw him in the lake for him just to come out and be homeless for a little bit and everything to try to build himself up. And I was like, this is a hard-ass villain. But he started off good, then he became obsessed. And that's the part that we're saying was his downfall to me, because I'm like, you got the dub, you took care of him, but you're still out here obsessed with this man. We can just still be out here getting this money, doing what you're doing, because you're the Kingpin of New York. But yeah.
You should have finished it.
Yeah.
I liked him as an antagonist. Like, this man, like, literally, like, lost his job, and Kingpin pulled up and was just like, you know, if you need a job. And I'm just like, you're so wild. You're so wild. And it was just, and in my head, I was just like, what would he even do if he did take the job, honestly? And it was just like, he did everything. He did everything imaginable just to like destroy like Matt at the end of the day. I'll never forget that explosion.
Yeah. there's nothing better than a press in a obsessed villain. Like he went to the details, like, nah, you ain't I'm declining all your cards, none of your bills getting paid, you're gonna be homeless, and I'm blowing up your spot just cause. And then when he starts scrambling, he was like, all right, I'm gonna drop Nuke. Literally.
Yeah.
You have to face him. So yeah, I think he was he definitely surprised me because I've never been a big fan of Fisk and in any of the just Spider-Man stuff is it's just never, you know, I was like, he's just big and powerful. But this one he showed his power, which is the money, and so that was pretty cool seeing that. I've never seen Fisk in that, or I never respected Fisk in that light, so definitely had a different perspective on him. So yeah, I think he was a very good antagonist on this one.
I love his ruthlessness. Like, when he got the information about who Matt was, he basically said, kill everybody who has touched this envelope.
Yep.
And I was like, that's tough. He gonna kill everybody down to the first person who wrote it. That was crazy. And then what I also like about him is that even though he has the money and stuff like that, if you are in a one-to-one fight or even like a 1-to-10 fight with him, he's still a formidable fighter despite him being fat.
Yeah.
And he was literally killing people with his bare hands and everything like that, so he could get his dirty work done himself. And it seemed like everybody around him was expendable. The only foolish decision he made was not just killing Matt. Yeah, just ending it. You know, he ruined his life and everything like that. I could understand up to that point. But if he was really cold and calculating and stuff like that, if he was really smart, he would have just killed Matt Murdock. You have a man that you think is pretending to be blind all this time, and he's a ninja, and he's hurting your business in all these different ways. Why just not kill him? You know?
It was another thing I even liked was just like after he, you know, Matt supposedly drowned in the lake, and then like we just see Fisk and he's just like, no corpse. And I'm just like, he's so wild.
I mean, it makes sense.
And he even kept on going because like, what was it? Ben Urich was trying to like do a little research on him. And he called the cop that was in the hospital bed that was, I can't remember what he did, but...
He was the one that lied.
Very bad.
Yeah. And while he's on the phone, he hears him being choked out on the desk. And he just watched, like, the animation, and he just gets all red and everything. I was like...
Yeah. Bro, I was about to say, can we please talk about the nurse?
Yes.
Bro.
Shotty was wild. Oh, she out here choked that nigga out. She beat niggas up. She hanging wives. She doing it all. What kind of is?
Bro, I was like, yo, who the heck is this? I thought it was just some random side character. She out here killing niggas. I was like, man.
Like nothing either.
She was tough.
It was tough that he had people everywhere too. Everywhere that Ben went, like even when he came out of Jameson's office, Jonah Jameson's office, the custodian was like, yeah, you better keep your mouth shut. I was like, damn, he got people everywhere. And then you get to the jail cell and they're about to interview the nurse. His homie, one of his people was working for Fisk. Everybody dies except Ben and another person, right?
Yep. Like, what's it, literally?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Joint, pop, pop, pop. Then he takes a joint and shoot. What's it, hit, kills him and all that. I was like, that man, like I said, Kingpin of New York, he has his hands everywhere.
Yeah. That was wild. I think we should give the colorists their flowers too. Richard Lewis, the coloring was amazing. Like, the way he colored Ben's face, I just remember when just said that, the way he was coloring Ben's face and like just different scenes in this, it was beautiful in a way, but it really helped like the drama in each scene. I liked how Ben's face changed color and everything like that. It wasn't normal, you know, I'm just going to make this beautiful coloring. The coloring went outside of its way to, you know, add to the drama and the tenseness and stuff like that. So I think that was cool.
Yeah, I love it when creators do stuff like that, where they just go out of their comfort zone. Well, not comfort zone, but they just go out of the box like that, and just to emphasize it, because it definitely hits harder. Like when I seen that his whole face turns red, it's like, if you see it in, you know, I'm not sure if they adapted that. Did they adapt that part on the Daredevil series, the season 3? Do you know that they did it?
No, they didn't adapt. They didn't do anything special with the coloring. Another thing we should talk about in the art is that they didn't do anything in regards to Matt's powers. They didn't show his powers, like his,
yeah, like the ones sensitive and everything and all that. Like, you know, like the little
echo thing. Yeah, and you still got a sense of his power set without that, you know, that visualization. And I think that kind of adds to how powerful the writing and the art is. Because you can still totally understand his power without that visualization that you see in other Daredevil runs. Yes. And the last thing that we're going to answer is this question. Frank Miller is one of the most important comic book writers ever, really. He is responsible for many of the interpretations of pop culture characters we see in media today, such as Batman, Daredevil, and even Superman. Do you think this story supports his acclaim?
Most definitely. Like, let's say it's a great story. It's gritty. It's deep. I mean, you have the whole thing. I mean, you have that man, like I said, like Drew said, down, bad, and everything. And part of me, like, okay, for this part, I'm still a little iffy about, like, besides the ending, I'm iffy about the part where he took Karen in and forgave her and everything and all that. I was still a little iffy about it. I mean, it was kind of, I get the symbolism behind the whole, I don't need material things or possessions anymore or whatever. I'm just thinking about the here and now. I'm happy you're back. But I was still like, okay, I would be like, nah, sorry, we go to rehab first and we talk about it, but still. But as far as that, I mean, it was a great story through and through, and it does support the claim behind Frank Miller's fame. But yeah.
Oh yeah, it definitely does. I agree with this. This falls in line with the other great stuff that I've heard that he's written. Also heard some things. Do y'all know? I've heard he's like sexist and like kind of like disrespectful and like a bad person.
He's wild now. Yes, he's wild. That's a wild boy. We gotta read All-Star Batman and Robin one day. That story is crazy. We gotta read it. At one point, Frank Miller just kind of like lost all his marbles, as great creators do. If you notice that, Kanye, oh, yeah. What is dude's name? The dude there, Alan Moore. Well, Alan Moore was always a little strange. But
they're always strange. It just came out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm gonna separate, you know, well, at least with this story, I'll separate, you know, how his actions are and his behaviors are with the, you know, comparing it to the story. But yeah, he's definitely, you know, this falls in line with his line of work. So yes, to answer your question, yes.
Yeah, I've always heard about his work, but like actually touching, like picking this comic up and reading, I was just like, all right, I see what the hype is about. He really knows what he's doing with the pen. I give that to him.
Yeah. I think this book comes in third place of all the important Frank Miller stories that I've read, but it just makes me excited for when we come across Batman Year One and Batman The Dark Knight Returns, because that's when Frank Miller is at his absolute best. So, yeah, I really like this book. So, ratings. If you're a new listener, we use the Naruto Mission ranking system. That means we start at the highest, which is S rank, and we go to D rank. I'm going to give my rank first. I'm going to give it A-, because that's how I feel about it. Next person.
A-2, because good, but at the same time, ending in some of the stuff as far as, yeah, the ending, Foggy out here smashing the homie's extra joint, and Karen, that's the only reason I'm going to give it a minus, but yeah.
I give it an A, just because how, like, you know, that cop got choked out in that hospital bed, man.
That's the only reason.
There's more, but that part really stuck with me. I was just like, I don't know. That's the part where his whole face turns red. You just I imagined myself on the phone and talking to someone, and just they just get choked out. And I was like, oh dang.
Like, hey, I like that.
That scene made me think, like, most of this stuff can be adapted straight into television, except like maybe the last two issues when Captain America and the Avengers show up.
Yeah, that's a little too much. But
yeah, it literally could have been copy and pasted into a whole show. Like, I mean, it's in season 3, but you know what I mean. But I would give this. I don't want to give it an S, but I'll give it an A+. I think I'm gonna give it A+. It doesn't have an S feeling for me, but it's definitely really, really good. Do y'all think this is the best Daredevil book?
I mean, this is my, like, this is, besides the current run, this is the second Daredevil thing I'm reading.
Okay. I actually enjoy Mark Waid's run better. I mean, this is just one story from Frank Miller's run, but I enjoy Mark Waid's story more because it's when Daredevil stops being depressed and he's like, let's be happy about life. Let's actually look at life in a positive light. So you see him smiling all the time and trying to think positive, even though shit is still thrown in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And the art is amazing. And the current run right now by Chip Zdarsky,
yeah,
nigga, that joint is fire.
That shit's fun. I'll be honest, that shit's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's about to be another legendary run. So,
Okay. Okay, but yeah, I'll give it an A+, S- if I were to, you know, if I was feeling good. But A+.
All right,
S-. I've never heard of that.
Yes, sir.
S-.
A+. All right,
y'all. That wraps up the show. Thank you guys for listening to another episode of The Blurs. Feel free to follow us on Twitter, Instagram at The Blurs Word, and our Facebook page called The Blurs. Also, feel free to leave us a 5-star review and a positive comment on your favorite podcast aggregator, preferably iTunes. And remember, we will read your positive comments out loud on the show. You know, give you a shout out and all of that. And see you next time.
Peace out.
And don't forget to tune into our video.
Yeah, YouTube. We're gonna cut that out.